Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios. It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Good Monday morning. It is 9 a.m. here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 a.m., 99.1 FM. And we have a busy show for you today on The Glass Half Full. I am Jordan Glass. If you want to be a part of today's show, you can definitely do that. 850-623-1330. Again, that's 850-623-1330. We, of course, are going to be talking a little Sun Belt and all the fun there. But before we get to that, do want to say thank you to everybody that came out on Saturday, broadcasting live from the Sun Belt Conference Tournament for FanFest and throughout that first opening game. And just really want to, again, just say thank you to everybody that came out and stopped by. And it was nice seeing everybody, you know, putting a face. You know, we get text messages, we get calls, and people coming out and coming up and saying hello and that they listen to the show. So we definitely appreciate that. Shout out to Austin for hanging out with me for the 2 hours and kind of, you know, being able to bounce off my crazy ideas and kind of bring me back down. Because you know me, I can get a little crazy with the take sometime. And Austin kind of brought me back down to earth a little bit there throughout those 2 hours. So appreciate him hanging out and enjoying the day there at Sun Belt Tournament. And also, big shout out to Jeremy, right? Jeremy, not only my partner in the booth for high school football here on ESPN Pensacola, but also held down the fort here in the studio, made sure we were sounding good, made sure everything was running right. So thank you to those guys. It's true what they say. Teamwork makes the dream work, and we got one heck of a team here at ESPN Pensacola. So, again, thank you to those guys for everything that they did with the broadcast. And, of course, thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors, Hall's Hardware, Jerry Buys Cars, Frank Buys Cars, Jerry Drive-In. We've also got HQ Korean Barbecue, Hot Pot and Sushi, and Sonny's Barbecue, all being a part of that that broadcast there on Saturday at the Bay Center. So it was a fun time, and look forward to getting out in the community and doing that a lot more for sure here with ESPN Pensacola. I also want to remind you before we get into today's show that we are your home station for March Madness. That's right. So if you're looking for a radio station here in Pensacola to tune into for each and every game for the NCAA tournament starting on March 18th and running through April 7th, we got you covered right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, and also online. And, of course, you can download the ESPN Pensacola app as well. Let's go ahead and get into today's show, and we will start with the SBC tournament, just kind of wrapping up the weekend that was. Some weekend takeaways for me on the women's side. Troy looked impressive Saturday. Right, they were taking on Marshall. Marshall was kind of one of those teams that, you know, we talked about Georgia State on Saturday's show. We talked about Georgia State and Marshall kind of battling out of who is really going to be that Cinderella, right? Who is it going to be from the women's side? Was it going to be a Georgia State? Was it going to be Marshall? Turns out it was neither one. They both ended up going home that day, and Troy just looked very dominant in that performance against Marshall from start to finish. Troy was just in command of that game. Marshall did a great job of keeping it close early on, but like I said, Troy just flexing that muscle. And I was actually talking to a Troy fan before that game got started between the Georgia State Coastal Carolina game and Troy and Marshall, and they told me this, like, look, when this Troy team, when they shoot the basketball, they are good enough to beat just about anybody in the country. So we saw that. It was on display. Unfortunately, though, it did not translate well for them into the semifinal on Sunday. They go into that game against Arkansas State. Arkansas State outscored them 15-4 off of points off of turnovers. Troy had 15 turnovers, and they gave up 15 points off of those turnovers. So average to giving up about a point per turnover. And for me, when I look at that, that was really a deciding factor in that game. It really was. I think the point differential in itself was 24, but that swing right there, that 11-point swing, points off of turnovers, really was a big deciding factor in that game in the semifinals for Arkansas State. Because if you look at just about every other statistical category, rebounds, shooting percentage from the three-point line, shooting percentage from the free throw line, shooting percentage from the field, it all was very similar. I'm not going to say it was the same, but the numbers were close enough to where it should have been a lot closer than a 24-point ball game. I think it was points off of turnovers. I think it was the fact that Troy struggled to hold on to the ball. I think that was kind of a big issue for them Sunday. And I think that's why we're talking about Arkansas State playing James Madison for the women's championship, that game coming up here at 1 o'clock. So you definitely don't want to miss out on that down at the Bay Center. And I tell you what, I believe we actually do have some tickets. So if you wanted to go to today's championship games, all you got to do is text in the word Sunbelt. Just text in the word Sunbelt, S-U-N-B-E-L-T. You text that in, we'll pick our winners, and we'll get your information and get you into the system. And you'll have to come by and pick up those tickets by the end of business today. But again, we do have the women's championship game at 1. The men's championship game will be at 6. So if you want a chance to go watch those championship games today, just text in the word Sunbelt to 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. On the men's side, I think the biggest surprise and biggest takeaway for me was the fact that last night we had I don't know if I want to call Troy beating James Madison an upset, because that's a 3 seed taking on a 4 seed, and really it's a 3 seed beating a 4 seed. So I don't know if I want to go with that being an upset. I think the thing that surprised me is the fact that Troy beat James Madison by 19 points. 19 points. I was not expecting that. That was definitely a surprise for me. James Madison is a very good basketball team. And I said it on Saturday, and I still stand by it. I think there are going to be some Sun Belt teams that are going to have a chance to get into the NCAA tournament, if not the NIL, NLI. Either way, we've got NIL, NLIs, they're all bleeding together. So you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. But, you know, they're going to have a chance of getting into the tournament, a postseason tournament, just based off of the season that they had. And I think when you look at James Madison, you look at South Alabama, I think those teams will have an opportunity to be in the conversation. Again, like I said on Saturday, are they going to be like an 8 seed? No, absolutely not. They're going to be in a situation where they've probably got to play into one of those first 4 games where they play themselves into the tournament as a 16 seed or something like that. That's where they're going to be. That's just the unfortunate nature of being part of the Sun Belt, is that even when you have a good year, you're still kind of right there on that bubble of you could get in, you could not get in. That's why winning this tournament, that's why the emphasis on winning this tournament is so important. It's because you punch your ticket in automatically, right? Like you're automatically in. All you got to do is win the tournament. There's no question about it. Because if you're the tournament champion, or the conference tournament champion, you are getting in to the NCAA tournament. There is no committee to tell you no. There's no way that it's not happening. You win the Sun Belt Conference Championship on the men's and women's side, you're in the dance. But there's still teams like JMU and South Alabama that I think could be part of the conversation of still being able to find a way to get in without winning the conference tournament. Again, they're going to have to play a must-win game to probably earn their spot in, you know, one of those first 4 in games, if you will. But definitely when I look at first 4 in, first 4 out, to not have a James Madison, to not have a South Alabama in that conversation, they may not ultimately be a part of it when we settle this in a week. What is Selection Sunday? Next Sunday? So next Sunday, when we're looking at the NCAA field, they may ultimately not be a part of it. And I get that. It's all part of them being in the Sun Belt. It's just an unfortunate thing of the product where they're one of those teams to where I think they're going to look more towards an ACC team. Right, if it comes down to a James Madison or a team from the ACC, you know, because, again, at the end of the day, with these tournaments, whether it's college football playoff, whether it's NCAA tournament, you do have to think in the sense of money, right? And when you think about it, it's what team is going to be a better matchup moving through the tournament? James Madison may be the better team. But there could be a team from the ACC that they go, well, that matchup's going to bring in a little bit more interest. It's going to bring in a little bit more money. And that is a factor that's taken into account. People can say that it's not. You can say that it's not. But I think the college football playoffs have proven that that very much is part of the conversation when it comes to selecting these teams for whatever it may be. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. But right now, I think we're going to have two great championship games today, whether that's the women's championship at 1 o'clock or the men's championship coming up at 6 o'clock. And shout out to the Red Wolves, by the way, Arkansas State getting in the championship game on both sides of the tournament. Like the women's Red Wolves team, the Lady Red Wolves, and the Arkansas State men's team are both in the championship game. Second year in a row for the men's team, by the way. They were the team that beat that got beat by James Madison a season ago. They do not have to worry about that again this year as they will be taking on Troy. And I expect that Bay Center with a lot of I expect a lot of maroon in that Bay Center tonight with a lot of Troy alumni in the area. So definitely looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You're just now tuning into the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to be a part of the show, you can text in 850-623-1330. Again, that number, 850-623-1330. Let's kind of move away now from some basketball. Let's talk NFL because we had several things happen over the course of the weekend. Obviously, we talked about the Geno Smith trade on Saturday when we were broadcasting live from the Bay Center. Austin and I kind of broke it down and talked about what that may mean for the Raiders, especially with their draft pick coming up at number 6 overall. But how about with some of these other things that have popped up over the last couple of days, including yesterday, we now find out that the Seahawks are going to trade DK Metcalf to the Steelers. So now you look at it, Seattle without their top receiver, Seattle without their top quarterback, and I do believe DK was not the only wide receiver that was dealt away from Seattle. So that is definitely something that we are keeping an eye on here as far as what Seattle is going to do. Now, I think it's kind of starting to clear up picture-wise what Seattle's wanting to do. You look at the Geno Smith trade. What did they get for giving Geno Smith to the Raiders? Well, they got a third-round pick for this year's draft. What did they get from the Steelers for giving them DK Metcalf? They got a second-year pick or a second-round pick in this year's draft. So they've added an extra pick in the third round. They've added an extra pick in the second round. They are holding strong with their pick in the first round. And I really do think that they are trying to stockpile picks here so they can go out and they can get a whole crop of fresh, new, young talent to bring into this organization and help shape the future of what the Seattle Seahawks are going to look like. Again, does that mean that it's the right move? Does it mean it's a smart move? I don't know. Only time will tell. Look, getting rid of Geno Smith, getting rid of DK Metcalf, getting rid of a couple of other players that are key, you know, components to you having success, it's a gamble that's either going to look it's going to look bad, or it's going to be something that works extremely well. Either way, I think that there is an opportunity for the Seattle to really kind of surprise a lot of people with the moves that they're going to continue to make. I don't think we're done seeing Seattle make moves. I think the Seahawks will continue to find ways to stockpile picks, bring in young talent, however they may do that. I think that is what they're gearing for. That's what they're getting ready for. They are bringing in young guys to help kind of basically restart. They're hitting the reset button. They want to bring in a lot of younger athletes that are going to be able to be there for an extended amount of time. Because let's face it, Geno Smith, he's not old, but he's not young. Same for DK Metcalf. Not old, still has some seasons left in him, but he's not young. I think the Seahawks want to completely revamp and look ahead to the future and rebuild this team to be younger, and I think that's what they're doing, and that's why we're seeing them trade off these pieces. Look, Geno Smith going to the Raiders has everything to do with Pete Carroll being their head coach now, right? There was a conversation, it was a report that broke that there was a conversation on a plane that happened about an hour during the flight where Pete Carroll just happened to be on the same flight as the GM for the Seahawks. And they sat and they talked for about an hour. And that is seemingly where the deal for Geno Smith was worked out. And obviously they just needed to have both organizations approve it, agree to it, and then sign on the dotted line and make it happen. So I think Geno Smith, I think Seattle just kind of used that. They knew what they wanted to do. But when the Raiders came to them with the pitch for Geno Smith, they took advantage of that. And I think really, I think they asked the Raiders, what is the highest pick you're willing to give me for Geno? You want Geno, what's the highest pick in the draft you're willing to get rid of? And for the Raiders, it was that third round pick. And the Seahawks accepted. And then I think it was the same thing with the Steelers. They knew the Steelers. The Steelers have been looking for a guy to go with Pickens, right? They wanted to find a guy that could go with George Pickens. So they're trying to find somebody. DK Metcalf gets put on the trade block. There's some interest there from the Steelers. And it's the same thing. What first round, what 2025 draft pick are you willing to give me? Well, we'll give you our second round draft pick. Cool. We got a deal. I don't think we're done seeing the Seahawks make moves. I think they're going to continue to make moves. I think they're going to continue to maybe stockpile some draft picks or bring in younger players through trades. So just keep an eye on Seattle. I don't think we're done hearing their name in the media cycle just yet. Steelers, another team, talking about DK Metcalf. So they bring in DK Metcalf to go with Pickens. And you look at the lineup and what they're getting ready to do. And it falls in line with reports we're starting to get now. I know Saturday morning, Austin said, I do not want, as a Steelers fan, I do not want Aaron Rodgers in a Pittsburgh uniform. That's what Austin said on Saturday on our special edition of the Glass Half Full from the Bay Center. Unfortunately for Austin, that is what we are hearing now, is that the Steelers are starting to make a push for Aaron Rodgers. They brought in DK Metcalf, and this is exactly what we talked about that they would do. You bring in another top receiver to go with Pickens, so you have two really good receivers. So now you're going to have Pickens and DK Metcalf. You've got Najee Harris. You've got an offensive line that can protect Aaron Rodgers, that can keep him upright in the pocket, and you've got a run game with Najee Harris that he can really rely on to be his safety net and to help set up the run. And now that they have those pieces in place, they're making their move to bring in Aaron Rodgers as their next head coach there in Pittsburgh. I've said it all along. If there is a high-profile team that is going to get Aaron Rodgers, it is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. There is no doubt in my mind that if there is a team out there to bring in a guy like Aaron Rodgers on a high-profile team that is a playoff contender year in, year out, it's going to be the Steelers. And if it's not the Steelers, honestly, I really do see him ended up somewhere like Tennessee, like I said on Saturday. So I think the Steelers are going to be his best bet. And now that they've added DK Metcalf, now that they have Pickens, now that they're going to hopefully keep Najee Harris in that backfield there, keep that offensive line together, maybe even add a couple more pieces to it, I think it really makes an enticing offer to Aaron Rodgers, and it creates an opportunity for him to actually go play for a team that's going to give him the necessity and the tools he needs to go and win a Super Bowl. So we'll see what happens with all of that. I don't know. It is definitely going to be very interesting for sure. A couple of other things that we're keeping an eye on here in the world of sports before we head to our timeout. We are up against the break. The Bills and Josh Allen are finalizing a new deal that is 6 years, $330 million, with $250 million of that $330 guaranteed. I think that's smart. Lock down Josh Allen. And now you just got to go get him some weapons. You got to go get him some weapons that's going to help get you over that hump past Kansas City and into the Super Bowl. Secure Josh Allen. Make sure you lock him down. Honestly, I would have signed him to a bigger deal. I would have made sure he's here for the rest of his career. I would not want him leaving Buffalo. I would have signed him to a longer deal, given him more years, given him more money if it needed to be. But my whole goal with that contract would be not to let Josh Allen out of Buffalo. He's going to be drafted into the league a Bill, and he's going to retire a Bill. I still think that's probably going to happen. I don't see him leaving Buffalo, but still, I would have used this as a way to lock him down for the rest of his career. The Rams are signing three-time Pro Bowler Davante Adams This is going to be a two-year deal. First year of the deal is going to have a base salary of $8 million. And then in 2026, that $8 million is going to double to $16 million. I think this is a smart move right here. Partner him with Puka Nacua. He's going to be that replacement there for Cooper Kupp. And it's definitely going to create a dynamic duo that Matthew Stafford can take advantage of there in L.A. with the Rams. And I think it's double good news for the Jets. You got rid of the guy. He ends up getting signed. Hey, congratulations to him. He found a place that he's going to be happy playing for, and you saved about $30 million. So that's a win-win on both sides. Myles Garrett and the Browns, this is a crazy thing I didn't see coming. They signed a new deal worth $40 million. Obviously, Myles Garrett requested the trade, was very adamant that he wanted to be traded out of Cleveland, and Cleveland basically told him no. And there was kind of some back and forth there that maybe seemed like there might have been some bad blood. You know, he tried to go and talk to Haslam, the owner, and Haslam told him, no, go talk to the GM. He's the one that handles all the football operations. Just a lot of back and forth between the Cleveland Browns and Myles Garrett. Ultimately, no trade is going to happen. They've reworked the deal. He's signed an extension that is worth $123.5 million a season. $123.5 million total, $40 million a season. And I'm very curious to see what happened with these two teams because, like I said, last week and the week, a couple of weeks before, there was kind of some butting of the heads going on with Myles Garrett still wanting to be traded and then Cleveland refusing to do it. So I'm very curious to know what exactly happened behind the closed doors there in Cleveland that allowed them to come to this deal because it seemed like Myles Garrett was had his mind made up. He was not going to be a Cleveland Brown anymore. He wanted to go play for a contending Super Bowl team or a Super Bowl contending team, excuse me. And now he's going to stay in Cleveland. But he's going to make a lot of money to stay in Cleveland, so I guess it balances out. We'll take our first time out when we come back more of the glass half full right after this.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays 11 till 2 on ESPN Pensacola.
1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
All sports, all the time.
It's the glass half full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
It's 9:25 here on the glass half full. It's ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. I said that backwards. It's 9:26 here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. It's the glass half full. Thank you for tuning into today's show. I knew when I was saying ESPN Pensacola, I was like, that does not sound right. But you got what I meant. It's Monday morning. It's been a crazy long weekend of a lot of fun down at the SBC tournament for us here at ESPN Pensacola, and we are looking forward to Championship Monday later on this afternoon. Honestly, personally, I'm a little sad to see the tournament be over with. Wish it was a little bit longer than what it is because, man, it's fun getting to go down there and watch these teams play. But like I said, we've got our championship games coming up this starting this afternoon as it looks like Arkansas State and we will see Arkansas State and James Madison taking on each other on the women's side of the bracket. And it will be Troy and Arkansas State on the men's side of the bracket. So that should be two great games there. Keep an eye on that one game. In the women's side of things at 1 p.m. JMU, Arkansas State, they both can score a lot of points. Keep an eye on that one. That one could be a very fun game to watch. I think both of them are going to be good, but that women's game early on could be sneaky good. Not a lot of people expecting it. But let's keep it in the NFL now. We went to break talking about the NFL. We're going to come back talking about the NFL because I want to talk about if you're in the draft, right? Or you're going to be paying attention to the draft and you're going to be, you know, looking to see, you know, what exactly happens maybe with your team and a couple of other teams maybe you're in your division or whatever that may be. And maybe quarterback is on your list. Maybe it's not a top priority, but it's on your list. And you feel like maybe in one of the later rounds, second, third, fourth round, you may see your team go quarterback. What are some of these other quarterbacks in the draft, not named Cam Ward, not named Shedeur Sanders? Obviously, we know about them, but who are some of the other ones? Obviously, I think one of the guys that we talked about on Saturday, Jackson Dart, definitely going to be a guy who is going to be a surprise. And I compare him, and I still do believe this is the case, that he is going to be this year's Bo Nix, right? We were surprised that they took Bo Nix at 14. Not necessarily that Bo Nix was taken in the first round. We thought maybe he could have been a late first round, early second round. But Denver taking him, what was it, 14 or 15, that they took Bo Nix was a little bit of a surprise. But it seems to have worked out for him. Seems like that's the guy that Sean Payton wanted. And seems to really have been a step forward for him last year. And I'm really curious to see what Bo Nix continues to do moving forward in year two with the Denver Broncos. So for me, when I look at this, I really do think Jackson Dart has that ability to be that next guy that is taken a little bit higher than what we expected by a team we weren't even thinking about. So keep an eye on Jackson Dart. This is a guy that 6'2", 223, he's got the size. He's definitely got the ability. I mean, I don't know if there's any person in this draft in the quarterback class that throws a deep ball as nice as Jackson Dart does. It's on target. It's got a nice spin to it. It's got a good sound to it. And what I mean by sound is when it's released and it's cutting through the air, you can kind of hear if a pass is going to be a lame duck or if it's going to be a great pass. And just about every time, it sounds like it's a great pass from Jackson Dart. So watch out for Jackson Dart. I think Jackson was kind of one of those guys, and we talked about a little bit after the combine. He's one of those guys, he really used the combine to his benefit. He really used the combine to get in there and make a name for himself and boost himself up off the lower levels and possibly into a higher pick than what we're expecting. And that's why I think Jackson Dart is really, really going to have a great opportunity to be this year's Bo Nix. I really do. Some of the other quarterbacks, obviously Jalen Milroe. You got to talk about Jalen Milroe. Dude is an ultra-athletic playmaker. I mean, there's no other way to explain him. He is absolutely a beast. He is a lot of fun to watch, and he is a pain in the you-know-what to coach against. I think there's going to be teams out there that see what Philly did with Jalen Hurts, and they're going to try to emulate that with Jalen Milroe. And I think they'll be able to. I really do think they'll be able to. I do have some questions for him. He did tend to put the ball on the turf a lot this past season for Alabama. That would be a concern for me if I'm a scout and I'm watching him to potentially be the guy we take in the draft. Can he go through the course of the season without the turnovers? Can he limit the turnovers? If he can do that, and he can make all the throws on the field, there's not a throw that Jalen Milroe can't make. He can make the throws. He can make wild plays with his legs. He can surprise you with his athleticism, because you know he's a good athlete, but he even takes that to a different level, and it's a lot of fun to see. So for me, my question with Jalen Milroe is the interceptions, it's the fumbles. Can you limit those turnovers? If you can do that, I think there is a team out there that is going to have an opportunity at possibly trying to have what Philly has with Jalen Hurts, they could have with Jalen Milroe if they do it the right way. That's going to be a big if, though. It's a glass half full here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, 850-623-1330 if you want to be a part of today's show. You can text or call that number again. It's 850-623-1330. Is kind of going through this list here a little more. We've got Kyle McCord from Syracuse. A quarterback who is, you know, he's got the size, he's got the arm strength, 6'3". 218 pounds, definitely is a guy that is going to want to get in there and kind of make a name for himself as he's going to drive up the boards here and try to climb a little higher and maybe be a guy that, you know, doesn't end up on a practice squad. I think right now the thing with Kyle McCord, he's a dink and dunk guy. Right, we talk about Jackson Dart and his ability to throw the ball downfield. We talk about Jalen Milroe and how he can make just about any throw on the field, plus use his legs to beat you with. But Kyle McCord is a dink and dunk guy, right? He's going to pick up first downs. He's not going to – it's not going to be a 75-yard touchdown play on one drive. It's going to be a 10 to 12 play, 82-yard drive where he's just dinking and dunking. You know what? Dump off a pass here, 5 yards, 6 yards. Hit a slant here to pick up another 4 or 5 yards. Pick up that first down. Now you're focusing on picking up the next first down. That's the way Kyle McCord is. He's going to focus on picking up that next first down, keeping the football safe, not turning it over, and picking up that next first down and marching down the field. And that's how they're going to score points. And that's what we saw him do at Syracuse. It worked for him at Syracuse. I think that's actually a method that can work in the NFL. I really do. As long as you can stay ahead of the chains and you can pick up those first downs and march down the field, I think a guy like Kyle McCord can be a quarterback that could potentially have some success in the NFL. But again, he has got to find the right fit. I don't think Kyle McCord can go to just any team, right? Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, they can go to just about any team and they can have success. Jackson Dart, maybe not just about any team, but there's a good portion of the NFL he could probably go to, and he could probably be a solid quarterback option for them. Kyle McCord has got to go to the right place. Right now, I'm not sure I know exactly what team that right place would be. And if I'm being honest, I'm looking at Kyle McCord here, and I'm going to put him, I'd say Jalen Milroe. Jalen Milroe is a second-round pick. Kyle McCord, definitely a third round. And again, that's not a knock to him. I think it's just when you have Cam Ward, when you have Shedeur Sanders, when you have Jackson Dart and Jalen Milroe ahead of you, you're going to drop down and you're going to fall into the third round for sure. So I definitely think that that's probably a good spot for him. Like I said, he's got to find a way to make sure he is on the best team that's going to fit him perfectly. He's going to be holding the clipboard. Don't get me wrong on that. He is not going to be starting at all in the NFL. Unless there's an injury, he's going to be holding a clipboard. But he still has to go to the right location in the right place even to hold the clipboard. It's not just anywhere that he can just go. Our next quarterback, Will Howard from Ohio State. Here's the thing about Will Howard. His performance at the Combine left a lot to be desired. There was a lot of people leaving the Combine that were kind of let down by his overall performance and what he put on display there throwing the football. Now, I will say this in his defense and to kind of, you know, parrot what Shedeur Sanders said. Shedeur Sanders came out and defended Will Howard and said, look, you show up day of, you're working with guys that aren't your receivers. It's definitely going to be a situation to where it's going to be tough for you to get in there and just throw the ball around. You don't have rhythm with these guys. You've never thrown to these guys before. You haven't worked with these guys at all. There's no rhythm. There's no connection there. And it could tell. You could tell based off of how Will Howard performed at the Combine. So for me, when I look at Will Howard, his film during the season speaks for itself. The fact that he led Ohio State after that loss to Michigan, he led them through the postseason the way that he did and to win a national championship. Not a lot of people expected them. When they lost to Michigan, not a lot of people expected them to get into the college football playoff. Then when they did get into the college football playoff, they're taking on a Tennessee team in the opening round that can score a lot of points. People were looking at Ohio State saying, yeah, they're at home, but how is this offensive line going to protect for Will Howard against this SEC front seven? And then how is Will Howard going to play against this secondary from the SEC? Well, he carved them up and he blew them out. And he did that just about against anybody that Ohio State played through the remainder of that tournament until they got to the championship game and they had one heck of a ball game against Notre Dame. So Will Howard has the film. Will Howard has the cred. I think whatever he did at the Combine should be tossed out because I think we're going to see Will Howard actually make some pretty solid throws at his pro day. if Will Howard decides to throw on the pro day for Ohio State, I think we're going to see a different scenario than what we saw at the combine. Because I full-heartedly believe exactly what Shedeur Sanders said. I really do think there is something to, if you're trying to throw with these guys, and it's a situation where you have no chemistry, you've never worked with these guys before, stuff is going to be off. You're going to throw incompletions. It's not going to look as clean and crisp as it normally would. So let's see what Will Howard can do if he performs at the Pro Day for Ohio State. And let's go off of Pro Day, and let's go off of the film. I think there's a lot of people that are going to say that he's going to be a fifth round and he's going to fall. I still think Will Howard has an opportunity, if we're being honest. I think Will Howard has an opportunity to jump ahead of Kyle McCord. I really do. I think we could see Will Howard third, maybe fourth round. I don't necessarily buy into him being a fifth round guy. Because like I said, yes, it looked bad at the combine, but everything else we've seen from Will Howard looks good. So let's scratch the combine. You know, I mean, not everybody performed well at the combine. There's a lot of nerves going on there. You're working with a lot of guys that you've never worked with before. There's going to be issues. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be guys that underperform because of all of that. Let's see how he does at the pro day, and then let's judge off of that and the film. Let's take another time out. When we come back, more of the glass half full right after this.
Clinton Yates and a rotating group of guests give unique insights and perspectives on sports. It's Clinton and Friends, 10 until Rich Eisen on ESPN Pensacola.
It's the glass half full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Here on this Monday morning, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back in to the glass half full. Switching gears now from the world of football, we're going to head over and talk some Major League Baseball. And if you want to be a part of this conversation, by the way, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. I chuckle at this because this is something that I feel like should have happened a while ago, and now we're actually starting to see some more pressure mounting. Stu Sternberg, who is the owner of the Tampa Bay Rays, is being pressured now by Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred and some other owners, by the way, to sell the Major League Baseball franchise. This is coming on reports of all just the continued drama that has come from, you know, the whole stadium process and working to get a stadium rebuilt. They've been trying for years to work out a deal to get a stadium built somewhere in Tampa for the Rays that is going to be a new facility for them because they desperately needed it. And then obviously last year, unfortunately, a hurricane goes through that area and it damages Tropicana Field in quite severe way, to the point to where the Rays are actually going to have to play their home game at George Steinbrenner Stadium, right down the road from Raymond James Stadium. That's the spring training home for the New York Yankees. So the Tampa Bay Rays have to play their regular season home games in the spring training home of one of their biggest rivals. And that's because there has just been no movement. There has been no positive action towards a stadium being built. And honestly and truthfully, a lot of that comes from the stubbornness of Stu Sternberg and not wanting to put the Rays in this area, not wanting to add the Rays to this location. You know, Ybor City is begging Tampa Bay to build that area. They want that area to be the new home for the Rays. They want a stadium in that area. And that is an area that is being built up. It's being restored. and they said we would be a great area to be the new home for the Tampa Bay Rays. And Stu was like, ah, you know, we just don't want to leave St. Pete. There's been back and forth from the city of Tampa Bay, the city of St. Pete, and Stu Sternberg from the Tampa Bay Rays. And it's getting to the point now to where it doesn't look like there's ever going to be a stadium built. And so now Rob Manfred is getting involved and saying, look, if you are the owner of this team, cannot find a common ground with the city that you are the host of, and y'all can't work out a deal and find a way to build this stadium, then maybe it's time for you to sell the team. And there's been talks of moving the team, right? Stu, and I think, honestly, if you're a Tampa Bay Ray fan, you should love this idea because Stu Sternberg wants to move the team to Canada. He wants what used to be the Montreal Expos. He wants that to be what is now the Tampa Bay Rays. He wants to move them to Montreal. And there was this bizarre idea for Stu of let's play half the season in Tampa Bay as the Tampa Bay Rays and then be a completely different team from Montreal the second half of the season. I don't know if I've ever heard more of an asinine idea in the world of sports than that. To virtually be two teams in one season and play one half in Tampa and the other half in Montreal. It is absolutely ridiculous. And that's a real thing that Stu Sternberg came up with as the owner of the Tampa Bay Rays. Just to kind of give you an insight, if you're wondering why Rob Manfred is getting involved, that's why. It's because of ideas like that. There have been offers. I lived in Orlando when they came up with the Orlando Dreamers. And basically what that was is it was the same ownership of the Orlando Magic and a couple of other people in the city of Orlando that wanted to bring Major League Baseball to Orlando. They said there's no reason we have Camping World Stadium that hosts multiple major sporting events throughout the year, multiple, you know, college football season kickoffs, bowl games. We have our MLS teams with, you know, Orlando City and Orlando Pride. We have the Orlando Magic. We have the ability to have professional sports teams. There's even talks of when Jacksonville is renovating their stadium, the Jaguars calling Orlando home for that season or two seasons, whatever it may be. Orlando has the capacity of holding professional sports teams. Look at how long the Magic have been there and have worked. And as somebody who lived down there, when Orlando City or Orlando Pride have a home game, they are packed. Whenever there's a college football kickoff or the Pop-Tart Bowl or any of the other bowl games that happen, excuse me, there at Camping World Stadium, they are packed. When Orlando had the Orlando Apollos of the AFL or whatever it was called back in the day, AFL, Steve Spurrier was their head coach. It was packed, and the team was actually pretty good too. They've got the Orlando Predators. They've got the Orlando Solar Bears. Orlando's a sports town, and they wanted to bring the Rays in. Stu Sternberg shut that down. So now Rob Manfred is basically kind of putting the pressure on Stu Sternberg to pretty much sell the team and you know, wash your hands of it, and let's get it to somebody who's actually going to move this forward and do something that's going to help this franchise. Because this franchise has been stuck for quite some time. And now they're having to play their home games in a spring training facility that belongs to one of their biggest divisional rivals in the New York Yankees. Because they couldn't work out a deal and had a stadium built years ago that they could have already been in. They couldn't have a deal to where there's plans in place for a stadium to be built now. Everything's still up in the air. And Stu Sternberg is a big reason why. And I am all for what Rob Manfred is doing of, you know what, we need to put pressure on him to sell this team and get it in the hands of somebody here in the state of Florida or somebody somewhere else that's going to keep the team in Florida, because I believe Major League Baseball wants to keep the team in the state of Florida. I really think they do. There's a draw to the state of Florida. Beautiful weather, beautiful beaches, beautiful cities. vacation destinations. There's a lot of reasons why you would want to keep a Major League Baseball team in the state of Florida. And I think that's what Major League Baseball is trying to do. And I think maybe they're kind of starting to see what a lot of Rays fans have seen over the past couple of seasons. And that's maybe that Stewie Baby is shutting down all these stadiums and all these other people trying to buy the teams. Maybe he's shutting that down so he gets his way and moves the team to Canada, which is what he's wanted all along. Stu Sternberg is like the woman from Major League, right? You ever seen the movie Major League? She desperately wants to move the team. Ironically, I think she wants to move them to Miami. But she wants the Cleveland Indians to be so bad that she has to move the team. That's Stu Sternberg. He wants things to be so hard about building a stadium that he just moves the team to Canada. I'm all for him having to sell his ownership of the team. Get it to somebody who's actually going to do something that's going to move this team forward in a positive direction. Whether that is getting a stadium deal done with the city of Tampa or moving them to Orlando, wherever that may be. We'll take our final timeout when we come back. Your headline roundup right after this.
Share your thoughts about sports
and actually have a voice
with the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. Mornings from 9 until Clinton and Friends on ESPN Pensacola.
1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
Here are the ESPN Pensacola 1330 AM 99.1 FM contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other contest prize. Prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning and must be 18 years of age or older to win. For a complete list of rules, visit ESPNPensacola.com.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
9:56, wrapping things up here on the Glass Half Full. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to be a part of the last few minutes of today's show, you definitely can do that. 850-623-1330. Again, that number is 850-623-1330. As we are closing things out here, as we do on every show, time to take a look at some of the top headlines in the world of sports. And, of course, there is definitely some interesting things that we are keeping an eye on. Aaron Rodgers quickly emerging as the Steelers' top option at quarterback. And we talked about it before. Could that be a good fit for him? I said if they added another receiver to go with Pickens, you have Najee Harris in the run game, you have that offensive line. Yes, I think that would be a great place for him. What did they do over the weekend? They traded with the Seahawks to bring in DK Metcalf. So now they have DK Metcalf. They have Pickens. They have Najee Harris. They have that offensive line. I expect them to make a pretty strong push for Aaron Rodgers for sure. It looks like the Carolina Panthers are trying to shore up their defensive issues. They are going to make J.C. Horn the highest-paid DB in NFL history. He's getting a four-year, $100 million deal that is going to have $70 million of that $100 guaranteed. So J.C. Horn getting a big deal there with the Carolina Panthers. Josh Allen also getting a big deal with the Buffalo Bills. $330 million deal there for Allen, keeping him locked in for the foreseeable future there with Buffalo. Not that I think there was any worry about him leaving that area. Like I said earlier in the show, he was drafted as a Bills. I think he's going to leave the NFL as a member of the Bills. So no real surprise there. There was a surprise, however, with Myles Garrett. You know, Myles Garrett requests the trade. Cleveland says no. There's kind of some back and forth. Kind of almost appeared and seemed like there might have been some animosity there with those teams. But ultimately, I guess they were able to bury the hatchet. They agree on a new deal, $123.5 million, that is going to get Garrett Myles Garrett $40 million a season. So he's going to be taken care of there. I guess whenever you're making that much money, not playing for a contender is not really an issue for you anymore. Because remember, that was his whole thing with wanting a trade, was he wanted to be traded to a team that was going to be a Super Bowl contender. And I think now they just threw enough zeros behind a number that he said, you know what? I'm kind of okay with not being on a team that's contending for a Super Bowl. So we'll we'll see how that relationship continues to play out there. And the Rams, they'll be signing three-time Pro Bowler Devontae Adams. He'll kind of be that replacement for Cooper Kupp. So it'll be Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua. Could be a pretty solid duo for Matthew Stafford there in L.A. That's a two-year deal, by the way, for Devontae in L.A. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, I'll see you at the Bay Center coming up later on today for both men's and women's NCAA, but Sun Belt Conference Tournament Championship. We'll have both of those games for you. I'll see you out there, and I'll have more Glass Half Full for you coming up tomorrow morning.